Evita Hero, and I'm listening to Cut to the Chase.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Cut to the Chase, episode 50, entitled Beauty. Today, I want to signify something that is very special with today's episode. Today marks our 50th episode that we've recorded since March of this year. From a bootstrap podcast that originally started with no intentions of having the type of success that we've had, we have brought forth a very special guest to help us celebrate and commemorate something that is so commemorable in the history of our podcast family, achieving 50 episodes of recording. And so today, our special guest, Miss Evita Haron, she's a writer and a founder of a lifestyle blog, Curly Vita Crown, comes in all colors, a children's book author, a wife, and a mother. Her blog, Curly Vita, specializes in celebrating motherhood, womanhood, entrepreneurship, lifestyle, and multiculturalism, self-love, and beauty. As a writer, she specializes in email marketing, beauty, and curly natural hair as it relates to writing for hair companies. Evita started as a freelance writer and blogger professionally in 2015 and has been a contributing writer for Multi Curl Girl and My Girl Squad. After years of writing for other sites, she thought it was time to start her own blog. And in November 2018, she published her first book, The Girl with the Magical Curls, which was inspired by Dove Love Your Curl Campaign commercial and her own curly hair daughter, Tatiana. The premises of her book was to encourage self-acceptance, self-love amongst little girls and women. Learning to love your curls is a combined with the dose of fantasy and progenitor stories that take on an instance of social stigma. Tatiana becomes a neighborhood superhero after stumbling across a mysterious bottle of oil that helps her curls grow long. Evita's love for writing began when she was in junior high while writing short stories, poems. Before she started writing professionally, she was working as a high school educating sector. She has also a master's degree from Fordham University in pastoral counseling and spiritual care. One of her goals is writing books for children about mindfulness and spirituality from a emmanuel standpoint. Besides writing, Evita enjoys traveling, reading, listening to music, taking nature walks, doing Zoom, and spending time with friends and family and meditation. And so, as I said to our listeners, today really signifies, you know, for Cut to the Chase, a very special moment in recording 50 episodes. I think this topic overall is something that is quite Afrocentric in the aspect of so many things that have transpired in the world today. And before I give Evita an opportunity to have some opening remarks, I read an article by Tracy Owen Patton, and it says, "Hey girl, I'm more than my hair. African women and their struggles with beauty, body, image, and hair has become the quintessential standpoint of a lot of our oppression and how we perceive our self-awareness of who we are in the world today." And so some of the things that we're going to talk about today is based on that beauty. It's based on understanding who you are as an individual. It's based on acceptance of yourself, your cultural, your heritage, and the essential aspect of what Evita Haron is all about. And so, Evita, without further ado, do you have any opening remarks for our listeners?
Thank you so much question, Gregory. I'm happy to be here. And I'm happy to speak with you all and share with everyone my journey, as well as my reason for writing the book. Want to continue to empower others, for others to practice self-love and self-care. Be a tool to share that with, you know, women who need it and little girls who need it, then that's what I'm going to continue to do. So thank you.
You're quite welcome. You're quite welcome. And we're certainly delighted to have you on board as a featured guest. So let's kind of jump right into our questions. Your book was inspired by a Dove commercial, and as we all know, throughout history and present day, African-American minority women have challenged, you know, the definition of what we consider to be a white definition for beauty. So what were some of the things at the point in time that you were put onto this journey to begin to step away from this perception of white beauty?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to say back in 2011, actually, I had decided to stop straightening my hair. And I had thrown away my flat iron. And that's because, you know, my hair started thinning out. It started feeling really unhealthy. And at the time, you know, I was hair stores and looking at products and trying to figure out, you know, maybe I should really think about making a transition and embracing my natural curls. Valued them or really thought that they were beautiful at one point, you know? So I started going to the beauty supply store and looking at, you know, Miss Jessie's was one of my first introductions to curly hair products. So I bought one of their curl creams and I tried it on my hair and I really liked the results. And it's something that I really just started, it became a routine. You know, I would buy one curly cream, then I would buy the gel another week or in another month. So it's something that became gradual. It's a decision that I made based on the fact that, you know, my hair feels unhealthy and it's starting to thin out. And what do I need to do so that it can grow healthy again? What do I need to do to really love it and embrace it in its natural state? So that started in 2011. And I also want to add that right around that time, my husband and I were dating. He actually encouraged me to embrace my natural curls and to stop straightening my hair. So I want to say that men can also be your champion, your cheerleader in helping you to embrace your natural self. And, you know, in terms of the that didn't come until about 2014. My daughter was about 2 years old then. She's now eight, but she was two then. And I came across the commercial. I had already been natural from 2011 to 2014. So from that point on, I had tried different products and, you know, I kind of was getting into a routine with my hair. And I saw the commercial and I was like, wow, really beautiful commercial. They were interviewing little girls, asking them how they felt about their curly hair. And these are little girls who had naturally curly hair. And a majority of them did not like their hair. Some of them had moms who had straight hair and they wanted hair that looked like their mom's, or let's say there was a favorite princess that they liked. They liked, you know, their hair texture. So, you know, I thought about that and I said, wow, I was once that little girl many years ago, in the 80s, you know, not really you know, liking my hair, but not, but wishing that it was straight, because that was something that became culturally acceptable in my household, you know, with the women who I was around. You know, you go to the salon Saturday morning with your mom to get your hair straightened and curled with an iron, but not your natural curls. So, you know, I didn't end up really embracing that part of myself until, say, 2011. And then becoming even more confident. My daughter was born, seeing the Dove Love Your Curls commercial, and then finally coming out with a book and saying, you know, I've always wanted to be an author. I've always wanted to write books for a living. And I've always been a writer. But this is the first time that I've actually, you know, written a book and actually published it independently. So those are some of the things that made me even more say, you know what, this message, I know there's women and little girls out there like me that, you know, need to hear this, need to have a message out here like this. And, you know, I'm a believer in a girl's standard of beauty and idea comes from when she's little. And it's also based on the women that she is around, whether it be a mother, a sister, a grandmother, an aunt, and how they feel about their own beauty. So it definitely starts, you know, at that young age.
Well, certainly. Thank you for sharing that. It's rather coincidental that you brought up the curling iron and straight iron. I recall as a kid being, you know, being an African American or minority black or, you know, whatever type of category, you know, society puts on brown skinned people. You know, back when I grew up in the 70s, my parents at the time would use the flat iron or straight iron, and we would have what you call a blowout, you know, and we would have the air froze. And as a young boy, you know, that was always the most coolest thing to have an afro, you know, so you'd have the big pick. But then, you know, over time, you know, as I grew up, that flat iron surely wasn't my friend because that hot grease would hit your scalp. And those type of things were just very, very uncomfortable, you know? Yeah. So we certainly thank you for sharing, you know, that backstory and kind of what led to the beginning of your book development. And then, of course, your independent charter towards publishing your first book. And so, you know, the one admiration that I have in going into this next question is there's a lot of people out there nowadays that have stories, particularly as it relates to what we're talking about right now, you know, beauty, body image, you know, there's diversity and inclusion, there's hair, there's all of these different types of acceptance things that we thrive and we nurse to be just kind of included. You know, what are some of the things that you are seeing right now when you made your transition? Was it relatively smooth or was it a struggle? Or, you know, what was that kind of transformation for you? Because now, you know, you're in a position where, as I would say, you're completely comfortable and that care about not going back to something that is not natural is not something that weighs heavily on your mind. What would you say to some of those folks?
Right. You know, for me, it was pretty smooth. Once I made the decision, I stuck with it. But I think, you know, now you might see in social media, websites, there's companies. There's more of a community that empowers embrace their natural hair. There's a whole curl community and natural hair community that is, that has exploded in the past 5 to 7 years. So what helped me was becoming a part of that community. At the time, I was living in New York, pursuing my master's degree at Fordham, and I had hooked up with young ladies. What were their names? The Curly Hair Group. There were about four young ladies, all Afro-Latinas, and they had all embraced their natural hair. And, you know, they would give tips, they had events. So I started going to those events and I started meeting other young ladies around the city who were just transitioning. Some were had already transitioned before me. And they were kind of just a source of encouragement and friendship. And, you know, we just talked about, you know, the latest products. Have you tried this? You know, how do you, you know, each woman has a specific curl type. And I think the thing is to find the product that works for you and your curl type, so that your hair can continue to be healthy. And, you know, finding those groups of women who can relate to you and you can relate to them, and just sharing information, empowering them. You know, that's a community that helped me, I think, also shape my book. And they actually support everybody that I come across and meet. I also want to give a shout out to BB Michelle Naturals. They are a natural hair company based in Florida, who is promoting, you know, natural curls. Love your hair, you know, keep your curls hydrated. So, you know, I actually started writing for them. So I really think just putting myself out there in the community and just letting them know, you know, hey, we all need to encourage each other to starting out. You don't know how to transition. You know, you have to, I always say, take baby steps. So you might want to write out a schedule for yourself and say, you know, on Saturday mornings, I'm going to do a deep condition. And start out with that. You know, eventually you'll get to the point where you'll say, you know what, I like these three particular products. I can go to the store and get flaxseed oil and boil it down. And start. I've actually started doing that every now and then. So, you know, that's some of the advice that I give to people, like take baby steps and just try new things. You know, there's nothing wrong with buying something here and something there. And it's also nothing wrong with asking questions, you know, getting yourself into the, the community and asking questions and getting support that way is always good.
Right. Very, very, certainly a very, very good insight and just inspiring tips. And so as we talk a little bit about the book and the inspiration you had to utilize your daughter as the super hero of the book, I guess, you know, out of curiosity, you know, in a lot of cases, kids thoroughly enjoy being a part of something that really kind of inspires them and that kind of nurtures and fosters them. But how does your daughter perceive now being a published superhero?
You know, she you know, it's funny that you said that, because there's times I go to book events and they'll want to get her autograph as well. So she'll end up signing their book as well. You know, she's really excited about it. She's really proud of me, and she's proud of the book. And you know, I don't know if it totally has hit her yet. I mean, she knows that I'm a author. She's excited when she hears, oh, this person bought our book. The other day, two of her teachers sent me an email that they actually, they were going to read it in class, and mm-hmm. she was really excited about that. But she's excited about it. But I think now she's to the point where she's like, okay, you know, can I have some say in whatever next book we're going to write, whether it's a part two or if it's about something else that's related, she wants to have a hand in it. So she now, I guess, is the co-author.
That's awesome. That's awesome. It's always inspiring to certainly see kids thrive. Absolutely. And be a part of something very inspiring and motivating, and for them to, as I say, grab the bull by the horns with regards to how it impacts their future. Absolutely. and things going forward.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's certainly a blessing, and we're certainly proud of you and Tatiana. We're looking forward to the next wave of the girl with the magical curls. I mean, obviously that's something that I think all young, whether you're African American, African Latino, or whatever, if you've got curly hair, certainly it's very inspiring to see that there's a movement that is going on for that.
Absolutely.
So, as you have grown from being a blogger to writing for others, and now becoming, you know, your own writer and founder of your own blog, what are some of the things that you have learned along the way that have kind of helped you in your career growth path, and some advice that you may be able to provide to some of our listeners mm-hmm. that could be coming from maybe the same background mm-hmm. that you're coming from?
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that I learned, so starting out back in 2014, I was weighing the pros and cons of whether I should pursue a traditional publisher to publish the book, or whether or not I should remain independent and go through some other mm-hmm. platforms like Amazon or Ingram Sparks, and there's several others. In terms of the independent and self-publishing, mm-hmm. I decided to do independent because one of the experiences that I've experienced when I go out for to book events, or even if I participate in a community event, I found that it's much more personal. You know, you really get to talk to people. Mm-hmm. No, you really get to hear people's experiences. You get to, you know, swap stories with children. You get to, hear some of their ideas on what they thought. And you just really get to interact with them more than I think you would if you were, you know, traditional publisher or traditional author who, traveled around the country and is speaking to larger audiences, and you might not get to a chance to get feedback from everyone. And for me, I just felt like I wanted to take it this route this time because I really like to talk to people, and I really like to hear what their thoughts are about my book. I really like that personal connection. That's mm-hmm. I decided to go the independent publishing route. There's mm-hmm. also a difference in monetary. For traditional, mm-hmm. of course, mm-hmm. you have to share many of the royalties before the rest of the monies come to you. You know, mm-hmm. it's much more competitive. But there's tons mm-hmm. of you know, it's not just the big names, but it's also independent publishers that are publishing great books that not a lot of people get to hear from because it's not, you know, media is not showcasing it because media doesn't know about it. It's so many things that I've learned in being in the publishing business, and I'm still learning. The advice that I would give people who, you know, let's say they have an idea in their head that they want to write a book, I always tell people, write it. Don't edit it while you're writing it. Don't, you know, as you're writing a sentence, say, oh no, let me erase. Just let it flow. Write it down. You can always edit it later. You can always get your, say you have a friend who's a professor, or you have a friend who's a teacher, you know, get them to look it over for you, give you some ideas. If you want to hire a professional editor, you can do that. There's a great website called Fiverr, or even freelancer.com, where you can find some really talented people who will help you out with the editing process. But the important thing is to write it down first. You know, there's so many people that I know that have stories, great stories and ideas in their head, but they haven't written it down yet. The important thing is to get it out of your head and write it down first. And then you can worry about everything else later.
Sure. Absolutely. Totally understand. And I commend you for being an author, and particularly taking on, you know, the challenges of really taking this on independently. It shows the overall entrepreneurial spirit and the sure insight and intuition that you have towards controlling your own destiny and ensuring that you understand every step in the playbook and ensuring that that benefits you in the highest means possible.
Thank you.
Yeah. So we're going to do something a little different since this is like the 50th episode. I kind of want to play some rapid fire questions with you and just see kind of what comes to mind, you know, as it relates to beauty and as it relates to what we're dealing with in society. Mm-hmm. And so what I'm going to do is I'm just going to kind of rattle off, you know, maybe five or six questions just to kind of, you know, have our listeners understand from an author, from an entrepreneur, from a founder, from a perspective of where you are today in your life, you know, how you see things moving forward. Mm-hmm. And so my first question to you is, what does the significance of embracing change mean to you?
Embracing change means to me embracing something that is different, sometimes outside of yourself, being able to adapt to that change, and, you know, provided that change is a positive, being able to, you know, thinking, be free, basically. You know, if it's pertaining to, and I'll give you an example of, the Crown Act, which is, was passed in states like, New Jersey, New York, California. You know, that's change. That's change being embraced. I think it's just going to continue. I think it's going to allow women to, women of color, to fully feel like, you know what, this is a long time coming. Same time, this is us voicing our opinion about we are beautiful the way we are. We're going to continue to love ourselves, and we're going to continue to, you know, fight for equality, especially along the lines of beauty and natural hair. So I think change can be a wonderful thing in that regard, provided it's positive.
Sure. Well, you answered my next two questions, so now my brain is kind of racking to come up with another good question, because my next question was what I consider to be kind of a call to challenge, you know, based on what we know from an historical standpoint and from a standpoint of all of the theoretical examinations of what people have placed beauty in kind of a box. You know, my next question would have been to you is, have you seen that transformation with the overall standard of beauty outside of the box that society has portrayed and more into a acceptance criteria has started to kind of transform into something that is more open and acceptance? And I think you answered that question in your previous answer. And so my next one is something that I know is true and dear, and I believe it's going to be very sentimental to you because it involves writing. The importance of writing to you, even in the early stages of higher education and even in junior high. Describe to our listeners the significance of writing to you. Was it therapeutic? Was it for fun? Was it something that provided an outlet of inquisitivism? Give us your thoughts around that.
Sure. You know, so I started writing in junior high school, about sixth grade. And the type of material that I was writing was poetry. I have several books of poems that I have written over the years, and for me, writing poems, it was a way for me to express my emotions, especially if I was going through something at the time, or even if I wasn't going through anything. It was just about the world or about a particular situation or about someone. So it was definitely therapeutic for me, you know, writing poetry. And then I would also write, I'd say maybe about ninth or 10th grade, I started writing the short story that I've also thought of publishing in the future. I wrote a short story about a girl. Probably about teenage years. It was really just that short story was something fun. Was sort of autobiographical, but I was doing it mostly just for fun. I wanted to test my writing. I wanted to test myself and see, you know, what kind of things could I write? Okay, I knew at the time, okay, I can write poetry. And a lot of my poetry, I don't rhyme. Not that I don't like rhyming poetry, it's just not really my thing. I'm more of a direct, straightforward writer when it comes to poems. And then for the short story, that was really just for me to just test myself and see what other things could I write. And I feel like me writing that short story was a doorway to me being able to write a children's book. So that was, you know, that was definitely something that I was, you know, testing myself, but it was also therapeutic.
Sure, absolutely. And I guess I got two more questions, and then we'll jump into kind of a wrap up. But as parents in the world today, having little daughters or little sons that are exposed to social media, that are exposed to the news and the outlets of media streaming, what are some of the things that we can do, or what are some of the things that you can encourage some of the parents to do to ensure that as a little child, as a parent, that we help cultivate self-acceptance and self-love in our actions and in our words? What would be some of the things you would say to some of those parents?
I would say to, you know, I'm a believer in limiting the amount of, whether it's news content or social media content. You know, make sure that they're not spending the majority of their day on those type of platforms. I mean, it's okay to look at something. You know, nowadays a lot of young people have, you know, a favorite YouTube influencer that they may like to follow and look at, and same with Instagram. But just keep an eye on the type of content that they're looking at and try to limit it. Especially, you know, depending on, you can always tell if it's something positive or something that, you know, keep more of a close eye on. I'm a believer in positive affirmations, and even making vision boards. This year, you know, my daughter started making, actually her and I together, I have maybe 20 vision boards, but this is maybe like her third one that I had her work on. You know, as a craft, she loves doing arts and crafts. And, you know, I said to her, hey, let's, you know, write down some positive words. She knows that I do that. So she wrote down some words and we put it together on a large board. And, you know, she started, you know, she starts to say them on her own every now and then. She'll look at the board and repeat them. And, you know, I think I always try to, my husband and I, instill in her that, you know, self-love is very important. You know, if you don't love yourself, or value yourself, nobody else is going to do that for you. So I'm a believer in positive affirmations. You know, if it's cartoons or dolls or various different shows, helping your children to embrace those other cultures and be around images and ideas that are outside of, you know, what they are. So I think helping them to practice that self-care as well, practicing in the mirror with them. I saw a video of a father who, him and his little girl were in the mirror and he was telling her that she's beautiful and she was repeating it to herself in the mirror, and he was telling her all these positive things. So doing things like that is really wonderful for parents to do. Limiting, you know, social media time and news time, and really just, you know, reading books on meditation, reading positive books, figures in history, you know, reading is, we're really big advocates on reading. I want to also throw that out there. I think that helps to shape a person that has a really, that can have a really good positive view on themselves, and they can bring that back out to society. So it starts when the kids are young.
Right, right. Well, certainly thank you for that insight. And I guess I always like to throw in just at least a fun question before we run out of time. Since you enjoy traveling, what's on your next bucket list once we're out of this COVID era and people can travel again?
Yeah. Wow. A couple of places. I would love to, you know, we really, for our, let me see, it was maybe about 2 years. Then for our honeymoon years ago, we went to Montreal, Canada. I would love to go back to Canada, this time to Nova Scotia, which has been on our bucket list for quite a while. So that's one place. I would love to go back to England and have my daughter experience that for the first time. She has not traveled yet, but we were hoping to do it this year, but you know, we have to wait until things clear up. So hopefully next year. Another place, I mean, it's several. Greece, Italy, back to South Africa. I went to South Africa in October of 2013 for work. At the time I was working at a fellowship organization for PhD students. And I got to spend 2 weeks there. Met so many people, made so many friends, and South Africa is a place specifically that I want to go back to. Johannesburg and Cape Town, which I've been to, but I want to go again. And Pretoria and a couple other places in South Africa on that list. But that's my bucket list. It's pretty full still. But
wow. Well, I'll have to say that a lot of those places on your bucket list, I've visited before, including Pretoria,
Oh,
South
okay.
Africa, where
Yeah.
I worked on a project with Eskom, who's one of the power companies down there.
Yes. Oh, interesting.
So certainly, yeah. I mean, that's the one thing about podcasting. I mean, you have an opportunity to have such a wide outreach, and when you meet people, you find out there's so much synergy.
Yeah.
Where when you let your guard down, and like we've talked about, self-acceptance, beauty, and self-love amongst, it's about embracing everyone, because there's always a physical connection. There's always that connection. As I always say, we're cut from the same cloth,
Absolutely.
and it's rather interesting that for every place that you mentioned, I've got a story. Without dragging this podcast out for an hour, we'll have to catch up on those stories at a
Yes.
later time.
Oh, that's
But
great.
do you have any closing remarks that you'd like to state for our listeners?
I just want to say thank you, everyone, for listening. And thank you, everyone, who has actually supported me and my book, and in any way, whether you have done a giveaway for my book, or whether I've been interviewed by you, or whether you have actually purchased your book for that special little curly girl. I really appreciated all of your support, and I just want to say, for everyone to keep practicing self-care and self-love for yourself. You'll feel a strong liberation. You'll feel a stronger spiritual connection to others. And I just want to say, keep following your dreams. Keep staying positive. Keep loving yourself. Keep loving others.
Excellent, 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 excellent. That this has been a excuse me, this has been a wonderful 50th episode to embrace it with you, Avita. I certainly appreciate you taking time out.
Thank you.
And just to our listeners, I just want to close out with one kind of remark here, is that there's basically all types of beauty. And when we begin to marginalize certain types of beauty that deviate from the norm, that's devastating to all women and children alike. And so, as a part of what we take and the lessons that we've learned here in 2020, is that I would hope that everyone is listening to this particular episode will understand that regardless of color, style, body image, or type, is that we are all human beings, and that we all require the same respect and love and unconditional equality as all other men and women alike. So, with that being said, folks, this is Gregory Proctor, episode 50. We can celebrate now. Episode 50's in the bag. Miss Avita Haron, we certainly appreciate it. Our love goes out to you. We're looking forward to hearing about the second book and doing whatever we can to help you promote that. This has been a wonderful, wonderful episode. And to all of our listeners, thank you very much. This is Gregory Proctor, your host. Cut to the chase. Bye-bye.